here reading for the Chester and Flintshire Talking newspaper for the week ending the 2nd of August. I hope you have managed to cope with the extreme temperatures we have had so far this summer. Many wildfires here on the hillsides of Wales, on the moorlands of Greater Manchester and Scotland, on the heathland at Dunwich in Suffolk, as well as further afield in Spain and France, have been alarming, to say the least. Grasslands are scorched and farmers have had to harvest their crops early to get at least some yield before the plants die off completely. On Wednesday of this week, there was a grain moon, the traditional name for a full moon at this time of year, symbolising the annual ripening and gathering of crops. Whole families were expected to reap the grain crops on the land on which they lived, with all other activities stopping. Old and young alike would play their part in bringing the harvest home, although it went to the landowner's home and not their own. After the harvest, gleaning could begin, a practice mainly undertaken by women and children. In areas such as the East Midlands, this was very well organised, with a queen being elected by the women folk and crowned in a ceremony. The queen would then decide what time the daily gleaning bell should be rung to indicate when the gleaning of a particular field could begin. Gleanings are the pickings left behind from a harvest. Ringing the bell meant that everyone had a fair chance to collect valuable scraps of grain off the harvested fields for their own use. In Welsh folklore, to see several foxes together is unlucky, but to see a lone fox means that good luck will attend you. The bells of the foxglove plant ring to warn foxes of hunters nearby. And my favourite, the fairies give the blooms of foxgloves to foxes to put over their paws to prevent them being heard by their prey when they are hunting. On Sunday, the 2nd of August, sunrise will be at 5:32 a.m. Sunset will be at 21:06 p.m. Hello, Caris here, reading some Flintshire stories. Newt protection plans lodged for A55 charging station next to OK Diner. Great crested newts will be fenced out of land on the A55 at Ewlow before work starts on an electric vehicle charging station under plans lodged with Flintshire County Council. The site sits in the westbound services between junctions 33A and 33B on grassland beside the OK Diner and the Shell Garage, west of the A55 and A494 interchange. Fast Ned UK Limited already has planning permission for the charging station, granted on 27th of February 2025. But before it can build, it has to satisfy two conditions attached to that permission. One covering drainage that will not trap amphibians, and one covering the spread of disease and invasive species. Ecologists Envis Ecology, who surveyed the site for FastNed, described the town around 3 kilometres away, Buckley, as a stronghold for great crested newts, a species it is an offence to kill, injure or disturb. There are records of the newts on the land immediately west of the site dating from 1996 to 2008, and three protective wildlife sites lie within a kilometre, including the Deeside and Buckley Newt Site Special Area of Conservation. The survey found a moderate risk to individual newts from the work. The measures put forward run through every stage of construction. One-way fencing goes up along the western boundary first, allowing anything already on the site to leave, but nothing to come back. Grass is cut in two stages, down to 10 centimetres, and then left for 24 hours so any newts have time to move off, before it is taken to ground level, under the eye of a licensed ecologist. No work happens between dusk and dawn. Nothing is cleared during the winter, when amphibians are hibernating and would not move out of the way. And overnight temperatures have to stay above 5 degrees centigrade for 5 nights before work, and be forecast to stay there for 5 nights after. Once the site is built, wildlife curbs beside the road, drains, let newts bypass them, and ladders inside the gullies give an escape route to anything that falls in. If a newt turns up while work is underway, everything stops. Natural Resources Wales would then have to issue a licence before work could restart, a process the report puts at a minimum of 30 working days. Flintshire County Council, acting as the body that signs off drainage schemes, approved the surface water system for the site in July 2026. The wildlife and biosecurity details went in on the 21st of July through Agent DPP Planning and were registered by the council 2 days later. Consultation is open and the council has set a target date of 17th of September 2026 to decide.
One of Cheshire's most famous landmarks could close within 2 years following a whopping £2.8 million funding cut, which places dozens of jobs at risk. Jodrell Bank Observatory, home to the iconic Lovell Telescope, faces an uncertain future after the UK Research and Innovation Agency, UKRI, announced it is withdrawing its annual funding support. Unless an alternative source of funding is secured, all scientific work at the observatory and its telescope network are expected to end on April 1, 2028. Established in 1945, Jodrell Bank helped pioneer the field of radio astronomy and has played a major role in the study of distant galaxies for nearly 70 years. The site also became internationally significant during the Cold War, when its equipment was used to track Soviet missile activity during a period of high tension between East and West. Its contribution to science and culture was recognised in 2019 when it was awarded UNESCO World Heritage Site status. However, UKRI said it had been forced to make difficult spending decisions as costs across other areas of physics research and laboratory operations continued to rise. The decision put 28 jobs at risk at the Cheshire Observatory and could have wider consequences for the nearly 3,000 scientists whose research relies on Jodrell Bank's facilities. Professor Simon Garrington, Associate Director of Jodrell Bank Observatory, told the BBC his staff were devastated by the announcement. He added, "It's not just because of the fantastic science that we do, but Jodrell Bank and its telescope network have been a national capability for nearly 70 years and a beacon for science in the Northwest, attracting young people into science and technology careers." Continuous upgrades have kept the Lovell telescope among the world's leading scientific instruments and the third largest fully steerable radio telescope in the world. Critics of the funding decision warn the loss of Jodrell Bank would damage the UK's international standing in radio astronomy. For now, the future of one of Cheshire's best-known landmarks remains uncertain, with supporters hoping a new funding solution can be found before scientific operations come to an end in 2028.
Amazon donates 30 emergency bags for people fleeing domestic abuse in North Wales. 30 emergency bags for people fleeing domestic abuse are to be held at police stations across North Wales after a donation from Amazon to North Wales Police. The bags contained toiletries, a mobile phone, writing materials and comfort items. Separate versions have been made up for adults and for children. North Wales Police said they will be handed to people who have fled an abusive home and have no belongings with them. Stations across the force area, which covers Flintshire, will hold them. Detective Sergeant Sally White said, "We are incredibly grateful to Amazon for their generosity. This donation will help us provide practical support to some of the most vulnerable people in our communities at a time when they need it most." She added, "Leaving an abusive relationship can be one of the most frightening and difficult decisions a person will ever make. Victims often leave with nothing more than the clothes they're wearing, so having immediate access to essentials can make a significant difference during these first critical hours." An Amazon spokesperson said, "We are proud to support North Wales Police in their efforts to protect and safeguard victims of domestic abuse. We hope these grab bags provide some comfort and practical assistance to those facing incredibly difficult circumstances. Anyone in immediate danger should call 999. If speaking would put someone at greater risk, calling 999 and pressing 55 when prompted alerts the operator without the caller having to speak. Domestic abuse can be reported to North Wales Police on 101 or through the force's live chat service. The National Domestic Abuse Helpline is open 24 hours a day, every day, on 0808 2000 247. That's 0808 2000 247.
Hello, once again, this is Michael Jones with the news from Chester. Cheshire Police have deployed live facial recognition technology as part of their ongoing efforts to keep the public safe. The technology was used in Chester City Centre on Saturday, July the 25th, as part of Operation Vigilant, a wider scheme designed to protect vulnerable people and deter criminal activity. Neighbourhood officers were joined by teams from the Sexual Offender Management Unit and specialist live facial recognition teams from Greater Manchester Police. Detective Chief Inspector Robert Pritchard said Operation Vigilant is about keeping people safe, and this deployment saw officers safeguard vulnerable people and intervene early when concerns were identified. Live facial recognition is another tool that helps us protect the public. Used alongside neighbourhood policing, it supports our ability to identify wanted individuals and those who may pose a risk, prevent harm, and respond proactively when issues arise. During the operation, officers intervened in multiple incidents of concerning behaviour. Two women were arrested following a reported assault. Police also spoke to a man who had been behaving suspiciously, enabling early intervention, and engaged with another male who had displayed worrying behaviour around groups of women. A registered sex offender was stopped in order to leave the area under dispersal powers. Officers also provided support to a vulnerable woman and located a missing child during the course of the operation. Cheshire Police has become the first force in the country to use images shared by neighbouring police forces during an LFR deployment. DCI Pritchard added, "The public rightly expect us to take proactive action to keep people safe, and this deployment demonstrates how technology and visible policing can work together to achieve that. We remain committed to using live facial recognition responsibly and transparently as part of our wider efforts to protect the public." The force emphasised that LFR is used as a supplementary tool alongside traditional policing, supporting early intervention and improving public safety outcomes.
Connorskey swimmer Rhys Darby wins Commonwealth Games bronze. Connorskey swimmer Rhys Darby has won a Commonwealth Games bronze medal in Glasgow after the teammate who beat him to third place was disqualified. The 19-year-old touched fourth in the men's S14 200 metres freestyle final on Saturday evening in a time of 1:56.24. The S14 classification covers swimmers with an intellectual impairment which can affect reaction time, memory and the ability to hold a race pattern. Fellow Welsh para-swimmer Dylan Broom, who finished ahead of Rhys, was then disqualified for initiating a start early and Derby was promoted to bronze. BBC Wales reported that Broom is Derby's roommate at the Games. William Ellard of England won the final in a Commonwealth Games record, with Australia's Jack Ireland taking silver. Derby started racing at Connachie Swimming Club at the age of 8 and moved to the Nofio Clwyd Performance Squad aged 11, where he still trains for around 16 hours a week. The Nofio Clwyd Club takes swimmers from Flint, Mold and Connachie. Rhys was the youngest Welsh medalist at the Paris Paralympics in 2024, winning gold in the mixed S14 4x100m freestyle relay and silver in the SM14 200m individual medley at age 17. The year before, on his World Championships debut in Manchester, he won silver in the same individual medley event. Derby had qualified third fastest for Saturday's final in 1:58.20 that morning, almost 2 seconds slower than he swam in the evening.
What has been revealed for a building fire in Chester on Saturday, July the 25th? Three fire crews attended the incident at a derelict building on Hoole Way at 4:38 p.m. Firefighters wearing breathing apparatus entered the premises with a hose reel jet and carried out searches to ensure the building was empty and police cordon was in place. After finding the building was empty, crews were stood down at around 6:20 p.m. On Sunday, July the 26th, the Cheshire Fire and Rescue Service issued an update to reveal the cause of the blaze. A spokesperson said, following a fire investigation, the cause has been confirmed as deliberate. All findings have been shared with the police. In another incident, firefighters were called to the incident at Chapel Lane, Beeston, after a fire broke out at about 11:05 a.m. on Saturday, July the 25th. An estimated 30 square metres of land were affected. One fire engine attended the scene and the fire was thoroughly put out using an extended hose reel. Firefighters believe the fire started when a disposable barbecue was left in the area. In a third incident, one fire crew attended the scene in Foregate Street at about 10:30 a.m. on Sunday, July the 26th. A spokesperson for Cheshire Fire and Rescue Service said firefighters were called to a small fire in a flower bed. The fire was out on arrival and a bucket of water was used to dampen down the area. This is believed to have been caused by a discarded cigarette.
Man airlifted from Mostyn Docks after Coast Guard rescue. An injured casualty was airlifted from Mostyn Docks on Sunday afternoon after Coast Guard teams decided a helicopter was the safest way to get him off the site. Flint Coast Guard Rescue Team led the response and was joined by the Llandudno team. Crews treated the casualty at the scene before calling in the Coast Guard helicopter Rescue 336. Llandudno Coast Guard Rescue Team said in a statement, "We administered casualty care and determined that the safest way to extract the casualty from the scene would be by helicopter. Rescue 336 landed at the docks and the casualty was flown to an ambulance waiting nearby. The team said it is equipped to deal with a range of medical and trauma incidents and can call on other emergency services when needed. Mostyn Docks is a working port on the Dee estuary, west of Flint, and sits within the area covered by the Flint Coast Guard team. The Coast Guard's standing advice is to call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard if anyone is seen in danger or distress anywhere around the North Wales coast.
A Chester woman has been fined after she was seen pushing and punching another woman outside a shop in Forgate Street. Tricia Lloyd, 42, of City Road, Chester, appeared at Chester Magistrates Court on Tuesday, July the 28th. Lloyd admitted using threatening or abusive words or behaviour in relation to an incident in Forgate Street on Sunday, June the 21st. Louise Dempster, prosecuting, told the court that police were made aware of an altercation on the street outside of a shop, and when reviewed on CCTV, they cited the defendant and another woman arguing for several minutes, at which point a fight ensued, in which the defendant was the instigator. The defendant was seen pushing her and punching her several times. Chris Hunt, defending, stated that Lloyd's record had a history of issues with hard drugs, but she had been clean for 2.5 years. This change has meant she had not been before the court for over 18 months. She had been living on the streets of Chester, and on the day concerned, she was on the phone to her mother when another individual, who Mr. Hunt said was regularly before the court, had been next to her. The defence said that the other person had insisted on swearing loudly while the defendant was in the middle of an emotional conversation and she had lost her temper. He added that Lloyd was very upset and did not deny those were her actions despite not having seen the CCTV. The matter was considered to be more serious as it escalated into violence, but Mr. Hunt asked magistrates to consider whether a proposed medium-level community order would be appropriate in the circumstances. Joe Roy Barron told the defendant that she would instead receive a fine of £120, along with a mandatory surcharge of £48 and court costs of £85.
Mould pupils win £150 for recycled sculpture of town's spring clean mascot. Pupils at a Mould primary school have won £150 after building a sculpture of the town's spring clean mascot entirely out of recycled materials. St David's Catholic Primary School took the top prize in this year's Mould Spring Clean Schools Recycling Competition for its model of Springy, the campaign's mascot. The competition, run by Mould Town Council as part of the annual Mould Spring Clean, asked children to design and build sculptures or models using recyclable materials only, with each entry carrying an environmental message. Pupils could enter alone or in groups, and there was no limit on the size of the models. Children from Ysgol Bryn Coch, Ysgol Bryn Gwalia, Ysgol Maesgarmon and St David's Catholic Primary School took part, submitting more than 35 entries between them. Judging was carried out by the Mayor of Mould, Councillor Joe Edwards, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Pete Dando, and Caroline Prue, Flintshire Project Officer for Keep Wales Tidy. Mayor of Mould, Councillor Joe Edwards said, "We were absolutely delighted with the fantastic range of entries we received. Every sculpture was creative, imaginative, and carried an important environmental message, making the judging process incredibly difficult. It was wonderful to meet so many of the pupils involved and hear how much they had enjoyed working together to create their projects. The enthusiasm, teamwork and effort shown by everyone was inspiring." The judges had originally planned to award a single £150 prize to one school. Two runner-up awards of £75 each were added after the panel found the decision too close to call. One runner-up prize went to Ysgol Maesgarmon's Girls Only Club, who researched Mould's landmarks and then recreated the town centre out of recycled materials. The other prize went to Ysgol Bryn Coch for a sculpture of two ducks carrying the message, "Don't let litter get into the water." All three winning schools also received litter picking equipment donated by Keep Wales Tidy. St David's Catholic Primary School said, "The St David's Catholic School Youth Council members, Ella, Phoebe, Noah, Yonah, Lincoln and Jessica, are thrilled to have won the Recycling Schools competition. We plan to use the prize money to purchase something that promotes recycling in our school grounds, helping all pupils continue to learn about caring for the environment." Teaching assistant Vicky Lee was delighted that the children won the competition. They worked incredibly hard on the project, giving up their lunch hours for a whole week to make it a success, she said. "Their commitment, teamwork and enthusiasm has truly paid off. We would also like to thank the judges and Mole Town Council for organising this competition and giving us this wonderful opportunity." Nia Wynne-Jones, deputy head teacher at Ysgol Maesgarmon, said, "Members of Ysgol Maesgarmon's Girls Only Club were delighted to take part in this competition and took the challenge of recreating mould using litter very seriously. It was a real team effort with Teddy, Amelia, Gwenllian, Ella, Molly and Erin completing the model and presenting it to the judges. Having taken part in this year's Mould Spring Clean event, the competition provided another fantastic opportunity for our young people to think about the impact litter has on our communities." Leanne Jones, teacher at Ysgol Bryn Coch, added, "We are thrilled that one of our models was selected as a runner-up. We are currently developing a food garden at our school, and the £75 prize money will be used to purchase plants, seeds and equipment to help this project grow." Mole Town Council has confirmed the school's recycling competition will run again as part of the 2027 Mole Spring Clean next year.
Chester Racecourse welcomed over 16,000 racegoers for its popular midsummer meeting on Saturday, July the 25th. The feature featured a competitive 7-race card, attracting racing fans as they enjoyed a day of sport in the unique surroundings of Chester's historic track. Ahead of the official racing programme, spectators were treated to a pony race, giving young riders, often referred to as the sport's jockeys of the future, the opportunity to showcase their talent on the track. The race was warmly received by racegoers and provided an exciting glimpse into the future of the sport. On the track, the 7-race card delivered plenty of memorable moments. Away from the racing, guests enjoyed a range of experiences across the race course, from general admission and premium enclosures to hospitality packages and dining experiences, with many making the most of the summer setting to enjoy a social day out alongside the sporting action. Racegoers were also able to enjoy live music from DJs throughout the afternoon, helping to create a vibrant summer atmosphere across the racecourse. Steve Davies, Chief Operating Officer at Chester Race Company, said, "The midsummer meeting is always a popular part of our summer programme, offering racing fans the chance to enjoy a day of competitive racing in a fantastic setting. The atmosphere throughout the racecourse reflected everything that makes our summer fixtures so special, and we look forward to welcoming racegoers back for the remainder of the season." The midsummer meeting forms part of Chester Racecourse's busy programme of summer fixtures, which continue to combine quality racing with entertainment, hospitality and memorable social experiences. The next fixture at Chester Racecourse is Family Fun Day on August the 2nd.
North Wales Police issue warning after fire started in Wepper Park area. Park rangers put out a fire in the Wepper Park area of Connachty after it smouldered overnight. North Wales Police said the fire was started the previous day and was still burning when it was found the following morning. Rangers reached it before it could spread any further. The force released a photograph of the scene showing blackened branches and scorched ground beneath trees. In a statement, North Wales Police said, "These incidents put people, wildlife and the environment at risk, particularly during hot, dry weather, when fires can rapidly get out of control." The force also warned that a fire that appears to be out can continue to smoulder and reignite. The fire follows a fortnight in which North Wales Fire and Rescue Service has dealt with repeated fires in the open across Flintshire. Crews were called to a grass fire on Holkin Mountain in July and to fires at Brimford and Baggett. By the 20th of July, the service was fighting fires in the open on Hope Mountain and at Brimford and asking landowners to stop controlled burning while conditions stayed so dry. The following day, the scale of the fires across the region led the service to request mutual aid through UK National Resilience. Crews and fire engines from Mid and West Wales Fire and Rescue Service and South Wales Fire and Rescue Service were sent to North Wales. On Monday morning, the service said the fires at Pentre Holkin, Hope Mountain, Mount Pleasant at Brumbo and Pentre Velin at Holyhead were all under control. Crews are still monitoring the mountain above Capel Ilo near Sychnant Pass, the Rhinogedd Range near Harlech and Bangor Mountain. Jodie McEachin, Head of Prevention at North Wales Fire and Rescue Service, said that with the dry weather conditions, even a small spark can develop quickly into a rapidly spreading fire. Grass fires can start within seconds, she said. The service has asked people not to light open fires or use disposable barbecues, to put cigarettes out safely and to take litter and glass bottles home. Anyone who sees a fire is asked to move to a safe place and call 999 immediately. Man who died in incident at Hollywell Takeaway is named. A man who died in an incident at a Flintshire fast food takeaway has been named at an inquest opening. Ali Nadiri of Maes Teg Cymru on the Wrexham-Flintshire border died at Talk of the Town takeaway in Hollywell Town Centre on the 9th of July. A county hall in Ruthin on Monday the 27th of July, an inquest was opened into the 29-year-old's death. It heard that police were called to the Talk of the Town kebab shop on the High Street at 10:23 p.m, where Mr. Nadiri, who was employed as a member of staff, was in cardiac arrest. Despite attempts to save him, he was sadly pronounced dead at 10:38 p.m. The inquest opening heard that police officers reviewed CCTV footage at the kebab shop. It showed Mr. Nadiri putting his hand on a hot plate that had been plugged into a socket. John Gittins, senior coroner for North Wales East and Central, said the footage showed at that moment Mr. Nadiri jolted backwards, appearing to have been electrocuted. A pathologist's provisional cause of death following a post-mortem examination is cardiac arrest as a result of mains voltage electrocution. A full inquest was adjourned pending further investigation.
A young boy in Chester had his life saved by four Cheshire police officers and four members of the public, leading to commendations. The eight people were thanked for their efforts in administering emergency first aid to a seriously injured child following a biking accident on Monday, July the 20th. Shortly after 2:15 p.m, a child who was cycling in the Shrewsbury Way area of Chester fell from his bike and sustained a serious injury in the form of a deep wound and a suspected arterial bleed. Two members of the public recognised the potential life-threatening nature of the incident and immediately came to his aid. A third member of the public, who assisted in medical treatment, while the fourth called 999, remained in constant communication with the Force Control Centre updated the child's family of the situation over the phone, and flagged down a nearby police patrol. The officers flagged down were PCs Broccoli and Ricardo, who without hesitation joined the members of the public in applying first aid, maintaining direct pressure on the life-threatening wound, working tirelessly to manage the bleeding, all whilst persistently pursuing an ambulance response and seeking further medical assistance. As concerns grew regarding the severity of the child's injury and ambulance delays, Sergeant Bithell and PC War were deployed to the scene due to having specialist trauma equipment and advanced trauma training. On arrival, they quickly assessed the situation and utilized their enhanced medical. Following the incident, the boy was taken to a hospital where, after extensive surgery, he was discharged and sent home. He was expected to make a full recovery. The efforts of the members of the public and the officers on the scene has led them to all being nominated for a Chief Constable's Commendation Award, the highest level of recognition for individuals or teams who have gone above and beyond in their community. Inspector Nick Bamber said, "Given the severity of the wound, the significant blood loss, and the suspected arterial bleed, it is entirely reasonable to conclude that the combined actions of all those involved were instrumental in preventing a far more serious and potentially fatal outcome."
Castle Green Homes boost for Home Start Flintshire. About 80 families are set to benefit from a strategic partnership between Home Start Flintshire and Castle Green Homes. Home Start Flintshire has supported families through their toughest moments for more than 30 years. It's urgently trying to raise £250,000 to keep its services running. Castle Green Homes has agreed to donate £12,000 over 12 months to the charity to cover a wellbeing programme. It's anticipated up to 80 families will benefit from this strategic partnership, plus the charity's volunteers. Home Start Flintshire Chief Officer Sharon Windsor said, "Every week families contact us because they are desperate and feel alone. We step in before crisis escalates, with volunteers helping children and families benefit from a calmer, safer, more nurturing home. Thanks to Castle Green Homes, we're able to offer a county-wide wellbeing programme, supporting families and volunteers across Flintshire. Building on our established delivery model of targeted home visiting and community-based group support, this will provide simple, practical wellbeing activities where families feel most comfortable and supported. The project focuses on prevention, resilience and emotional wellbeing, particularly during key pressure points such as school holidays, and the winter months when financial and emotional strain is greatest. Helping to keep children engaged and to support parents' confidence at a time when budgets are stretched and routines are disrupted. This funding will cover seasonal wellbeing packs to encourage calming activities, engagement in nature and the outdoors, supporting whole family involvement, outdoor wellbeing sessions in local green spaces to reduce isolation and improve mood, craft workshops such as making small planters and bird feeders to promote calm and connection, community wellbeing walks to encourage conversation, connection and gentle physical activity. One of the UK's fastest growing house builders, Castle Green Homes is a true hybrid developer, committed to building houses and supporting local communities by partnering with housing associations to deliver affordable housing solutions across the private sale properties. The company is well known across Flintshire, where its current developments include Gladstone Grange in Harden, Harden Meadows in Buckley, and Maes y Castell in Abermorddu. Partnerships Director Erin O'Donnell said, "Being a parent is perhaps the most challenging role you can ever take on. Home Start Flintshire and its volunteers do a fantastic job in providing emotional and practical support to families experiencing isolation, mental health struggles, and poverty. Through our strategic 12-month partnership with the charity, we'll be helping improve the well-being of parents, children, and volunteers across the county. For more information about Home Start Flintshire, visit home-startflintshire.co.uk. To support the charity's fundraising and give what you can, visit justgiving.com/campaign/save-home-start-flintshire.
A city centre location is set to be transformed into a vibrant interactive garden experience. Eastgate Square, in the heart of Chester, will become a floral haven for families, friends and visitors with the launch of Eastgate Garden, a month-long programme of free activities and live entertainment. The transformation begins on Monday, August the 3rd, and will include blossom trees, a flower-covered pergola, a central fountain and inviting seating areas. Lisa Rogers, centre manager at Eastgate Square, said, "Eastgate Garden is all about giving people a reason to spend time together and enjoy everything Chester has to offer this summer. We've created a beautiful space that's full of colour, creativity and experiences, where families can enjoy free activities, friends can catch up over live music, and visitors can discover something new every time they visit. Whether you're joining us for one of our workshops, spending a Saturday afternoon enjoying a talented performance, or simply soaking up the atmosphere, we hope Eastgate Garden becomes somewhere people make part of their summer." The centrepiece of Eastgate Garden is a packed calendar of free events, including creative workshops, live music, and family-friendly attractions. Activities will run throughout August and are designed to appeal to all ages. 8 creative workshops will take place for families, including hat making, a fairy door workshop, a butterfly discovery lab, pressed flower art, and a garden sound lab where children can learn basic DJ skills. Workshops will run from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on designated days. In addition to the scheduled events, visitors can enjoy the Garden Explorer Club, a self-guided family trail, as well as garden games and playful challenges throughout the summer. Every Saturday afternoon, the garden will host live music and performances as part of its garden sessions. Further details will be announced soon.
North Wales Ketamine Campaign launched as hospital admissions climb. Emergency department admissions linked to ketamine in North Wales rose from 241 in 2023 to 412 in 2025, an increase of 71% in 2 years. The figures have been released as organisations across the region launch a campaign aimed at young people using this Class B drug. The campaign, called "I Wish Someone Had Told Me," is built around a documentary-style film following Bradley, a former ketamine user from Rhyl. He describes how his use began and what followed through addiction and into his recovery. Flintshire Sorted is among the partner organisations behind this campaign, alongside North Wales Police, Adveriad Mental Health and Addiction Support Services, Betsy Cadwallader University Health Board, Public Health Wales, House of the Vivian, Into Change, Barnardo's, Bedir Score and the Walich. North Wales Police Assistant Chief Constable Gareth Evans said, "Ketamine misuse is having a devastating impact on young people across North Wales, and we are seeing firsthand the serious risks it poses to their health, safety and future. By sharing these real experiences and clear information, we hope to encourage early conversations, early intervention, and ultimately prevent lives from being damaged. Dr. Jane Moore, Executive Director of Public Health at Betsy Cadwalader University Health Board, said, "Clinicians across our services in North Wales have seen a large increase in the number of patients with conditions linked to ketamine, including young people who have developed lasting and life-changing physical and mental health issues. It is vital that young people and parents can get clear, honest information about the harm ketamine can cause from places they can trust, and that's why we are working with other organisations across North Wales to support this important prevention campaign." Alongside the film, the campaign carries a series of messages taken from young people and their parents and carers, including one that reads, "I wish someone had told me I'd end up dropping out of university." These will run across social media, print and digital platforms. Mike Cooper, Youth Work Coordinator at Into Change, Wrexham's Young Persons Drug and Alcohol team, said, "We've seen a worrying increase in the number of young people referred to our service with ketamine listed as the primary substance, a trend that's grown significantly between 2021 and 2025. In response, we're working closely with partner agencies to tackle this issue head on. Our approach includes delivering universal drug education sessions in schools across Wrexham, offering tailored one-to-one support that takes a holistic view of each young person's needs and provides a practical advice around harm reduction, relapse prevention and staying safe. Ketamine is a Class B drug. Possession carries a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison, an unlimited fine, or both. The film and campaign materials are available at adveriad.org. That's adveriad.org. Adveriad.org. Anyone worried about their own ketamine use or someone else's can contact Dan 247, the Wales Drug and Alcohol Helpline, free on 0808 808 2234 or by texting Dan, D-A-N in capital letters, to 81066. That's the Wales Drug and Alcohol Helpline, free on 0808 808 2234 or text Dan, D-A-N, to 81066.
Cheshire police officers have made two arrests and taken serious action in a day of tackling antisocial behaviour on e-bikes. On Thursday, July the 23rd, officers were deployed across Chester Local Policing Unit, LPU, as part of Operation Lawmaker. The operation follows a number of recent incidents involving the use of e-bikes and the antisocial use of vehicles. The operation involved Chester Beat Management Team, Western Problem Solving Team, NPAS Fixed Wing Aircraft, Bike Unit, Roads and Crime Unit, and Force Control Centre. The operation achieved the following results: one arrest for drug driving, one arrest for disqualified driving, one PG9 dangerous vehicle condition report being issued, six traffic offence reports issued, nine vehicle seizures for offences such as having no insurance and no licence, one man reported for summons to court. Inspector James Wilson said, thanks to a collaborative effort from various teams across the force, our officers produced some excellent results, including nine vehicles seized in just one day. We recognise how disruptive the use of illegal e-bikes, e-scooters and dangerously ridden off-road vehicles are to residents, and this operation sent out a clear message that the illegal use of vehicles will not be tolerated. We will use a range of resources to tackle this issue. You can report issues of this nature to Cheshire Police by calling 101 or visiting the Cheshire Police website. In an emergency, always dial 999.
De-estuary cockling rules face first rewrite in 18 years. The rules controlling who can gather cockles on the de-estuary are to be rewritten, with 54 licensed gatherers working under an order that expires in June 2028. Natural Resources Wales and the North Western Inshore Fisheries and Conservation Authority submitted a joint application for a new regulating order in January. A regulating order is the legal framework that sets who can work the beds, how much they can take, and when the fishery is open. The current order has been in place since 2008. Natural Resources Wales says it ended the boom and bust harvesting cycles that preceded it, supported the 54 licensed gatherers now working the estuary, and helped restore estuary habitats and bird populations. The fishery holds Marine Stewardship Council certification, an international scheme that independently assesses whether a fishery is being fished sustainably. Without a replacement order, Natural Resources Wales says the fishery risks over-harvesting, habitat damage, and the loss of the ecological and community gains made since 2008. Stuart Thomas, team leader, Marine Sustainable Management for NRW, said, "The Dee Estuary cockle fishery is recognised as one of the best managed fisheries of its kind in the UK. We encourage anyone with an interest in the fishery to take part in these engagement sessions and help shape proposals that will support its long-term sustainability and benefits for both people and nature." The two bodies say the new order would sit alongside national fishing licences and add protection specific to the estuary. Neither has set out how the new order would differ from the one it replaces. An informal online survey was carried out in September 2025. The joint application followed in January 2026. Stakeholder sessions are being held this summer, with formal consultations due to begin in the autumn. Mark Taylor, Chief Executive Officer at NWIFCA, said, "North Western IFCA encourages everyone with an interest in the Dee Estuary cockle fishery to come along to one of these events and share their views. Your feedback will help NWIFCA and NRW develop effective, sustainable management of the fishery under the proposed new regulating order." Four sessions are being held during August. The Flinches session is on Wednesday the 12th of August at the Victorian Schoolroom, Greenfield Valley Heritage Park, Greenfield Road, Holywell. The others are at Grange Over Sands in Cumbria, at Wallasey and at Llanelli. The sessions are open to licensed and prospective gatherers, local residents, environmental stakeholders and fisheries industry representatives. Places must be booked in advance through the NWIFCA office on 01524 727 970 or by email to office@nw-ifca.gov.uk. Slots last 45 minutes and run on the hour from 10 a.m. Views can also be sent by email to dcockleregulatingorder at covithnaturiolcymru.gov.uk. That's D Cockle Regulating Order at covithnaturiolcymru. That's CYFOETH naturiolcymru.gov.uk without attending a session.
Hello once again, this is Michael Jones with the sports news. It's one down and two to go, and Phil Parkinson is especially looking forward to Wrexham's next friendly in America. The Reds have returned to the States for the third time, and first since 2024 for three games against Premier League sides. Wrexham kicked off the pre-season tour in Florida with Saturday's clash against Leeds United at the Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, ending in a thrilling 3-2 win for the Reds. Parkinson's men now travel to New York to face Liverpool at the Yankee Stadium in the early hours of Thursday morning before returning to Philadelphia's Subaru Park, where Wrexham faced Philadelphia Union in 2023, to take on Sunderland on Sunday, August the 2nd. The Reds boss, who has revealed he hopes to announce a first signing this week, admits it will be incredible playing a match in New York against Premier League giants Liverpool. Obviously, going to New York to play Liverpool at an iconic stadium is going to be something special, he said. Let's be honest with you, that's just incredible playing in New York. It's an absolute dream. The fixture in Philadelphia will have added significance for Wrexham co-owner Rob Mack, who was born and raised in the city. While Parkinson had a short stint in charge of Sunderland, where his current right-hand man Steve Bargin was his assistant. Philadelphia is Rob Mack's hometown, he added. To go there and play Sunderland, another club who've done brilliantly the last few years. It's a stadium we've been to before, a really good arena for football, and playing against Sunderland, obviously me and Steve were there as manager and assistant manager for a short period of time. That's kind of irrelevant, really. It's going to Rob's hometown and putting on a show for him and his family as well. Wrexham, who toured Australia and New Zealand 12 months ago while preparing for the new championship season. Parkinson believes being asked to return to America by promoters to face three top-flight sides is a sign of the progress made by Wrexham, who secured a record-breaking three successive promotions before finishing seventh in the second tier last term, only missing out on the playoffs by 2 points. If you look over the last few pre-seasons, particularly the American trips, we've had some really high-profile games, he added. Those games, Chelsea, Bournemouth and Man United, when we play them in San Diego, they've all been decent games. It's a real privilege for us to be invited back there, and to be invited to play three Premier League clubs is quite amazing for us.
Buckley Scout takes on Three Peaks Challenge to fund new Scout Hut. A 12-year-old from Buckley is taking on the Three Peaks Challenge to help raise money for a new Scout Hut for his local group. Morgan, whose fundraising page has been set up by his mum, Tamsin Harrison Royal, has already surpassed his original £1,500 target, with more than £1,685 raised. The challenge will support First Bistra Scout Group, which welcomes young people from squirrels and beavers through to Cubs, Scouts and its Fusion Explorer unit. Run by a team of volunteer leaders, the group offers more than 200 activities, from camping and hiking to community projects, helping young people develop practical skills, confidence and lifelong friendships. However, the group's current Scout Hut requires extensive repairs, prompting efforts to raise money for a new, modern building that can continue serving future generations. Explaining why he decided to take on the challenge, Morgan said, "Scouting has been a huge part of my life since I joined as a beaver when I was 6 years old. Over the years, I've had so many amazing adventures, learned new skills, made great friends, and gained confidence through the scouting movement. Since joining the group 6 years ago, Morgan said the Scout Hut had been at the centre of those experiences. He said, "Our hut is where we meet every week, learn new skills, plan adventures, and create memories that last a lifetime. Without it, many young people in our community would miss out on the opportunities that scouting provides." To help secure a new home for the group, Morgan has set himself what he described as his biggest challenge yet. "To help raise money towards a new and improved Scout Hut, I've decided to challenge myself by walking the Three Peaks," Morgan said. "This will be the biggest challenge I've ever taken on, but I know it will be worth it if it helps support my Scout group." Morgan said every donation, no matter how big or small, would help bring the group closer to providing a safe, modern home where young people can meet, learn new skills, and make lasting memories. All money raised through the challenge will go towards a replacement Scout Hut, helping to ensure generations of young people in Buckley can continue enjoying the adventures, friendships, and opportunities that scouting provides.
A mountaineer who nearly died in an avalanche has described how his recovery led him to amateur fossil hunting and the discovery of a marine reptile or sea dragon that had not been found in Wales before. Matthew Myersko said he was left with post-traumatic stress disorder after being unconscious for 20 minutes buried beneath a metre of snow after a slide on Yrwyddfa, also known as Snowdon, in 2014. It led him away from the mountains to fossil-laden beaches at Lavernock Point in the Vale of Glamorgan, where he discovered a jawbone from the Jurassic period 200 million years ago. Myersko, a civil engineer, said the painstaking process of fossil hunting helped his worries and stresses melt away. He returned to Yrwyddfa in 2018 for the Dragon's Back Challenge, hiking past the place where he'd almost died, but he said that by then he was already moving away from mountaineering. "Being on the beach and looking for fossils and being really focused on one specific task has been a tool for me to kind of process things," he said. "Worries or stresses melt away as you're focused," he said, comparing it to the mindfulness people can get from yoga, sport, or even watching a film. As well as helping his mental health, fossil hunting also led Myersko to the discovery of a 201 million year old plesiosaur jawbone, a type of marine reptile from the early Jurassic period, which had never been found in Wales before. He and two fellow fossil hunters were walking away from Lavernock Point when they spotted a large shape in the limestone. Myersko said that through contacting experts, they were able to establish that it was the lower jaw of a Romaliosaurus, a carnivore also known as a sea dragon. Research on the find by the National Museum Cardiff continues, and Myersko said he hoped it would lead to the publication of an academic paper. "Every now and then, whether it's a 5-year-old or a 50-year-old, someone finds something that's scientifically important or new to science, and we learn from that," he said. Myersko said fossil hunting was all about looking for patterns in the rocks. "I'm very much focused on using my eyes to find the fossils, but there's definitely plenty of trips where I go out and my hammer will stay in my rucksack." He said he likes to carry a hand lens for taking a closer look at rocks that catch his eye, as well as good hiking boots or wellies, and always a flask of strong coffee. "If you head towards Lavernock Point, you can literally walk along the beach and you may pick up a vertebra loose in the shingle from a plesiosaur or an ichthyosaur. You can also find bits of ribs, and you can find coprolites, which is the fossilised poo from these animals and from prehistoric sharks." Myersko said much writing about archaeology focused on the discipline itself, but he's written a book, In Search of Sea Dragons, A Fossil Hunter's Odyssey, on the process of fossil hunting. I wanted to read about the experience of actually finding fossils. You know, what it was like to actually discover something, he said. He suggested that many fossil hunters can be secretive about their process, especially the location of their finds. I've seen lots of photos of specimens, but the details of just where exactly they came from or what they looked like when they were found was always shrouded in secrecy. I wanted to put this out there and say, this is what I found, this is what it was like when I found it, this is how I collected and recovered it, and this is what it meant to me, he said.
10 billion wasted. The latest report from the UK COVID-19 inquiry says that the government wasted a mind-boggling 9.9 billion on PPE, personal protective equipment, things like masks, gloves and gowns, that was either out of date or not good enough to be used. Baroness Heather Wallett, the chair of the inquiry, said that the waste of taxpayers' money was vast and could have been avoided. She has made 11 recommendations to help the government better prepare for any future pandemic. And now for some news from the Science Museum in London. More than 100 years ago, the first ever news bulletin was broadcast on the radio by the BBC. Radio was so new that presenter Arthur Burroughs wasn't sure how fast to speak, so he read the news twice, once normally and then again more slowly, so that listeners could decide which they liked best. The stories that day included London fog causing travel problems and scores from a game of billiards, an early version of snooker. Then, not many people owned a radio to hear the broadcast, but that soon changed within 20 years. About 85% of households had one. Today, more than 30 million people in the UK listen to the radio every week. You can see the original transmitter that was used to make the first broadcast in Information Age at the Science Museum in London. Seals' incredible superpower. New research has revealed that seals filter sound through blood-filled ear tissue to hear underwater. Scientists at the Natural History Museum wanted to find out how seals can hear equally well in both air and water, which is something that humans and other mammals can't do. After scanning more than 200 living and fossil seal specimens, they discovered that seals' cavernous ear tissue swells with blood to protect the ear from being damaged by the extreme pressure changes that happen when a seal dives. As blood has a similar density to seawater, most of the sound is carried through the middle ear to the cochlea, and it is that which allows the seals to hear and communicate underwater. How cool! Energy drinks ban coming. The government has finally confirmed that under 16s in England won't be allowed to buy energy drinks from April next year. These drinks are high in caffeine and usually sugar too, and contribute to tooth decay, anxiety and a lack of sleep. The government says that around 100,000 children drink them every day. The new law will apply to any drink with more than 150 milligrams of caffeine per litre, except tea and coffee, and any shops or businesses breaking the law could be fined up to £2,500.
Amber Simpson has missed out on a place in the final at the Commonwealth Games. Wrexham AAC member Simpson was in action yesterday morning in qualifying heats for the women's hammer. Competitors were looking to make sure of their spot in Tuesday's final, but Simpson was unable to book her place. She finished the qualification pool in an unlucky 13th place, with the top 12 making it through. Simpson's best effort at the Scotstoun Stadium was 59.14 metres, just over a metre adrift, of 12th place Tara Simpson-Sullivan, who achieved 60.43 metres. Topping the charts with 68.81 metres was Canada's Cameron Rogers, more than a metre clear of second place Lauren Bruce, 67.70 metres. Barbara Roberts qualified in third place with her throw, 1 centimetre in front of Charlotte Payne. It was back in April that Simpson was assured of her place at the Commonwealth Games. He threw 68.16 metres to finish second at the early Decker Jam meeting in Illinois, achieving the Games A standard. Simpson finished fifth overall at the 2022 Commonwealth Games in Birmingham with a distance of 66.52 metres.
Newts, bred at Chester Zoo, have been released into the wild at a secret site in Catalonia as part of an international effort to save the species from extinction. The zoo, the only organisation involved in the breeding programme, has introduced 32 Montseny Brook newts to a mountainous habitat near Barcelona. Around 1,000 of the newts remain in the wild, and the species is listed as critically endangered on the IUCN Red List. The chocolate brown gold speckled amphibians grow to around 10 centimetres, roughly the size of a pack of cards. The release site is being kept secret to protect the newts from disturbance and from a fungal disease that can devastate amphibian populations, and the released animals have been given UV markers so their movements can be tracked. More than 100 more newts are still living at Chester Zoo while they mature, ready for follow-up releases, and 12 breeding pairs remain at the zoo in specially designed pods. The first newts arrived at Chester in 2017. Dr. Gerardo Garcia, animal and plant director at Chester Zoo, has been involved with the government of Catalonia's Montseny Brook Newt Recovery Plan since it began. He said, "These newts are fascinating and also quite cute, but they are extremely vulnerable. Their habitat is fragmented by roads, they are highly sensitive to water quality, and they face the constant threat of illegal wildlife trade." He added, "Usually when numbers get this low, you'd expect genetic diversity to plummet, but research shows it's surprisingly good. That gave us a strong foundation for the project." Ellie Bland, the zoo's ectotherm's keeper, oversees daily water checks, tank cleaning, head counts, and egg checks. She said, "They're quite quirky. They are visual hunters that target aquatic worms and insects. I pipette feed them and they are very reactive to movement. So we have these huge eyes watching us while we work." Mrs. Bland added, "It's awesome seeing them swim free. Moments like this are why I wanted to work in a zoo in the first place." Plans to build traveller accommodation on the outskirts of Chester have been approved by Cheshire West Planners. The application to change the use of land to the east of Sunny View in Dunkirk, near Chester, was called in by ward member Peter Wheeler. According to an officer's decision report from Cheshire West and Cheshire Council, Council Wheeler's concerns were on the grounds of severe traffic congestion in the area, change to the character and appearance of the area, flooding, light pollution, biodiversity, safety of work in proximity to oil and gas pipelines, and invasion of privacy. However, Planning Officer Coco Shung recommended the plans be allowed to progress, albeit with 10 conditions imposed. Among the conditions are that it be limited to 2 pictures, and occupation be restricted to travellers, submission and implantation of details regarding bat bird boxes and a soft landscaping plan, cycle parking and car parking to be retained. In making the decision, Ms. Shung highlighted the Human Rights Act for the applicants. She said, "Article 8 affords the right to respect for private and family life and home, including the traditions and culture associated with the gypsy traveller way of life and the best interests of the children. In addition, it is assumed that the applicant and their household share the protected characteristics of race for the purposes of the Public Sector Equality Duty, the PSED, under Section 149 of the Equality Act 2010. She continued, "The scale of the development is not disproportionate to the settlement and does not significantly impact on the character of the area. the development would also be acceptable in regard to highway safety, biodiversity, drainage and flooding. These matters are neutral in the planning balance. There is the high probability that there is a significant shortfall in the supply of land for Gypsy and Traveller permanent Gypsy and Traveller pictures. The site would assist in making up the shortfall of pictures, and there is a low likelihood of alternatives becoming available in the near future.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, Roger here with news of a blind marathon runner and a new invention that's helping him make history. He's using glasses that enable sighted people to give him guidance and direction in real time while he's running. His name is Clark Reynolds, and he's a 45-year-old man. He has run in the London Marathon using a tethered guide runner. That's someone who's tied to them that runs along with them. And he did that 3 years ago. But now he's upping the ante. Rather than using a physical guide, he's got an app on a pair of specs called Be My Eyes, and that will connect him with a worldwide network of sighted volunteers. Through a miniature camera mounted on the front of these smart glasses and speakers in the earpieces, people will be able to see what he could see and speak to him in real time, directing him through the typical 26.2 miles, that's 42.2 kilometres, of your average or your real accurate marathon. He says that running has given him another opportunity to spread the word about what unsighted people can do. He previously competed in the London Marathon with the help of a physical guide runner, but plans on running now with the help of a worldwide network of virtual volunteers. He's been supported by Fight for Sight, a charity which funds research into sight loss and for which he is an ambassador. Reynolds, who's from Havant, is also known as Mr. Dot, because that's a name he employs when he travels round the country teaching Braille through art in schools. He's been visually impaired in his right eye from the age of 6, but 13 years ago he noticed a shadow in his left eye, and since which time he's lost his sight. Be My Eyes is used for day-to-day tasks such as helping visually impaired people find the right button on a TV remote, for example. But Reynolds has explained that he accesses the help of volunteers, who are complete strangers, by saying, "Hey, Meta, come and be my eyes," and they will tell him if there's any obstacle or person in his way. He describes the glasses as similar to a Peloton bike with someone guiding you. "They're not only my eyes, but my cheerleaders too," he added as he runs along. So it can be surprising when they connect and see Reynolds in his mid-run. They probably think, "Oh gosh, this is a bit strange," he said, "but I'm really excited to be doing this. If you had told me 13 years ago that I'd be an ambassador for a major charity and I'd be inspiring visually impaired children around the world, I would never have believed you."
TNF Soundings. TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
It's Tina here now, and it's number puzzle time. There are five straightforward clues, each answer being the starting point for the next one. Are you ready? Brains in gear. This is a bingo call. Life begins at this number, or it's sometimes linked with the word naughty. Add the number of yards between one set of cricket stumps and the other. subtract this answer from the standard speed limit on British motorways. Add the first even number with two digits. And now finally, multiply this by two. Have you got your final answer? If not, press pause to give you a bit more time or track back to the start to hear all the clues again. Did you reach 36 for your answer? Here's how it worked out. That bingo call, life begins at this number, or it's sometimes linked with the word naughty. The answer is 40. Adding next the number of yards between one set of cricket stumps and the other, so that's 22 added on to 40, makes 62. Subtract this from the standard speed limit on British motorways, which is of course 70, so 70 subtract 62 leaves us with 8. Add the first even number with two digits. Well, that's 10. So 8 plus 10 is 18. And finally, if we multiply this by 2, we reach 36. Did you get 36 for your answer? Well done.
TNS Soundings. TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz from East Kilbride. Now, my choice today will be a name known to you all, Robert Louis Stevenson, the writer of adventure classics like Treasure Island and many other books. But his own life was also an adventure, indeed from Edinburgh all the way to Samoa in the Pacific Ocean. So here we go. Now, just to clarify, and this gets some people confused, there were two very famous Stevenson families. One were the family of locomotive engineers in the north of England. The other one, our family today, were the builders of lighthouses. In fact, his grandfather, also Robert Stevenson, planned or built 23 around the treacherous coasts of the British Isles. Our Robert was an only child. His father was a lighthouse engineer. And growing up, our Robert was a very ill wee boy, long periods of time in bed, many, many disturbed nights. And through these disturbed nights, as well as his mother caring for him, he had a nursemaid, the beloved Cummy, who not only cared for the sick wee boy, but also told him stories. Sometimes these stories were very dramatic, even scary, and gave him nightmares. But he was very fond of her because she did basically care for him in times of great illness. Growing up, the family were concerned. Their wee boy, whom they nicknamed Smout, was so ill he had a very erratic education in his younger years. But yet, he could dictate stories. So the imagination, perhaps prompted by nursemaid Cummy, was there from a young age. The family, of course, expected Robert to follow in the engineering business, and the disturbed education did not stop him from applying and being expected and then accepting a place at University of Edinburgh Engineering Faculty, of course. Now, this was not what our Robert wanted to do. And he became, shall we say, a very, very erratic student. In fact, he was quite a wild student because his father provided an allowance. And sad to say, our Robert spent his allowance in the pubs round the university and also in the brothels around the university, visiting the brothels so often that he had a nickname, Velvet Jacket. The photos of the time show him wearing the infamous jacket, and by this time he's grown a rather bohemian moustache. Will he become a lighthouse engineer? No. He eventually just gets the courage to tell his parents that engineering is not where his path lies. So perhaps law, suggested his mother and father, and he starts the law course. That doesn't really work either. And it becomes clear that our Robert has to tell them the reality. He wants to be a writer. He writes a lovely poem to his parents, saying that he will not be building the lighthouses so famous by other members of his family, but he wants to play at home with paper. In other words, write his poems, his essays, and perhaps the novels. The poor health, dreadful bronchitis, all winters, led him to believe that his health and his literary ambitions would both be nurtured by moving to warmer parts of the world, perhaps bohemian centres in the south of France. So he goes there. He meets people of the same attitude as himself. One such man is an already established writer, a larger-than-life character called William Henley, who sadly had the lower part of his left leg amputated. Some of the biographies of our Robert insist that this William Henley was the inspiration for a certain Long John Silver in a later novel. Meanwhile, our rather shady, very, very sickly young man seems to attract many women. They want to mother him. They want to care for him. And he meets the love of his life. One Fanny Osborne. She's American. She has what we might nowadays call baggage. She has come over to France. She believes she can be a writer. She believes she can be a painter. And she has left behind the ne'er-do-well husband called Sam. She has left him prospecting for gold and living a very, very dissolute life over in California. Can they be together? She has children. A divorce would maybe mean she would lose custody. And although some of the writers describe Fanny Osborne as a coarse coquette, they seem to believe they were made for each other. His parents were aghast. They threatened to cut off the allowance. So Fanny goes back to America with her children. Robert takes long-distance walks on a very reluctant donkey through the south of France. The donkey was called Modestine, by the way, and that was one of his first successful writings, Travels with the Donkey. The love, though, continues. He saves money for 3 years and then gets on a steamer in Glasgow, sails over the Atlantic, arrives on the East Coast, takes an overland train to California to be reunited in Monterey with the beloved Fanny. He was 29, a scrawny, sickly man, according to reports. She was 40, with the children. But they were married in 1880, and they decided then to live the life they wanted to live as best their finances would allow. They wanted to travel. They wanted to have experiences. One such experience was their honeymoon choice. I mean, really, is it wise for a man who had a bad chest to spend his honeymoon in a mining shack. You can decide that for yourself. But money was not yet coming in for his writing. They returned to the UK, where Fanny charmed the Stevenson parents. They were given money. They were given a home that they could live in near Bournemouth for quite a stretch of time, where our Robert met Henry James and also wrote the bulk of the novel that became Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But yet they were restless, and of course they still yet were struggling for money. But they were back to the States, they were living an erratic life, and then he had success with a stage version of Jekyll and Hyde, and then his father passed away, and at that point the money worries were over, and they could indulge the restless spirit because they now had finances. He wrote, he yearned to visit the Parrot Islands of the Pacific. And that's what they did together for the next 3 years, wandering New Zealand, Australia, Tahiti, Hawaii, and settling on Samoa. Was Samoa the idyllic South Sea paradise they had expected? No. Samoa by the 1880s, the 1890s, was a hotbed of local chiefs in prison, intertribal clashes, and the ever-growing interest of large powers in these tiny islands. America wanted control of Samoa. Isn't that topical? Germany wanted control of Samoa. And of course, Britain, the Britain of the Empire, was interested in Samoa as well. At this point, our Robert was writing, an ill man was writing 5 hours a day. And the remaining parts of the day, he was writing letters to the London Times to complain about the British government. He was writing letters to the British government directly. At such a depth and at such anger, he was threatened at one point with being removed from the island. But through this, the Stevensons managed to prosper. They built a house on a estate called Vailima. And through all their struggles, they showed themselves to be people of surpassing kindness to the population of Samoa. In fact, they were described in many ways as being like Highland chieftains of an idyllic past of Brigadoon type unreality. He wanted to be a Cameron of Lochiel. Despite these joys in their home in Samoa, the ill health continued. Oh, by the way, he also had a stepson who just took money, a stepson-in-law who also took money and several mistresses, and Fanny herself was quite an erratic woman. Mood swings, large purchases, trips to Australia to spend the money that our Robert was now earning through his earnings. I would like to tell you that Robert Louis Stevenson triumphed over his ill health, but I can't. By the age of 44, he was a thin, thin, ill man. He took a stroke in 1894 and passed away. There was dreadful sadness among the local people of Samoa upon his death. And in fact, they built an extra road from their estate up to the hillside where his tomb was placed and where it is till this day. Robert Louis Stevenson, the political activist, in fact, had been very aware of the position of these small islands. And 8 years after his death, the islands themselves were partitioned between America and Germany. But to end, I think, on a positive note, although it's a sombre account, Robert Louis Stevenson did find peace in Samoa. And in fact, he wrote the beautiful words that are engraved on his tomb to this day. And I'd like to finish the story of his life with these few lines that he wrote. Under the wide and starry sky, dig the grave and let me lie. Glad did I live and gladly die, and I laid me down with a will. This be the verse you grave for me. Here he lies where he longed to be. Home is the sailor, home from the sea, and the hunter home from the hill. That's my choice, Robert Louis Stevenson.
TNF Soundings.
That is all that we have time for on this week's recording. We hope that you found some of the articles we've put together for you to be of interest, and we look forward to reading for you again next week. So on behalf of everyone who's recorded tonight, I would like to wish you well and say goodbye.